Hello, you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with John Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Dude, there is always still that slight delay.
That Charles Barkley golf hitch. That golf swing.
I can't get the out of my mouth. It's going to take me a while, but we'll get used to it. All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amazing Action Comics Podcast. This week, we have an indie creator spotlight. We've got a special guest, Scott Ford from way up in Canada. I'm going to do it all day. I just know I'm going to do it. I'm sorry, Scott. It's just going to happen. hopefully, no offense is taken. So he's got a project that he has that he's going to be talking about. It's actually on Kickstarter. It's pretty cool, actually. Did you have a chance to look at it, John?
Yeah. Very, very neat stuff. I can't wait to talk to him about it. I love when we get to review books, but I really love when we get to do these creator spotlights, because I love hearing from creators about what goes into their concepts and why they make these choices. And this is such a unique thing that I'm really excited to talk to Scott about this.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, the unique thing about it that I like, I went down a rabbit hole and just started like doing research on, you know, when it's happened previously. Mm-hmm. And dude, I didn't sleep for like days. It's just, there's so much stuff out there that it's, you just keep going down and down. So,
All right.
So it was just crazy. So, all right. So let's bring him on board and let's get it rocking and rolling. So let's add him in and, oh, there he goes.
Hi. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Thanks for being
on, Scott. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming on board. How are things up there up north?
It's good. Yeah. It's pretty good. Not too smoky where I am. I'm in Winnipeg, middle of Canada, if you need to know geography. So I've got family out east that it definitely is more smoky for them, but I'm doing okay here.
All right, cool. Yeah, I've been out to Canada. I haven't been to central part of Canada, I don't think, ever. I've always been on the extremes. I've always either been on the east coast portion of it or Vancouver all the way on the west coast.
That makes sense. That's usually where the action happens, or where the popular stuff happens.
where the cities are, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So listen, again, thanks for being on. John and I did have a chance to look over what you had going on in Kickstarter. We're really interested in it. We're going to get into it, but we like to go over, you know, just kind of like what got you into comics before this whole creation thing happened. So when did you first discover comics?
I did not really read comics as a kid. I feel like you hear a lot of stories of creators of like, oh, I've been loving comics forever, but I didn't really get into comics until end of high school, first year university. And like as a kid, like I read random issues of, you know, Superman or Spider-Man, but it wasn't like a huge part of my upbringing. It wasn't until high school when I first discovered Mike Mignola's Hellboy. And that was the spark. And my first comic series that I did when I was 19, Romulus and Remus, is very heavily inspired by Hellboy. And you can see that inspiration pretty readily. Mike Mignola was a huge sort of awakening of, I didn't know comics could look like this, but also read like this. You know, it's still an action comic. It's still, you know, kind of a superhero figure fighting monsters. But it takes its time, and it has this kind of very melancholy kind of pacing that I hadn't experienced that before. And so that was a huge awakening. And then going into university, I went to the School of Art here in Winnipeg, and just meeting other folks who liked comics, and also just like learning about art in general, really opened my eyes into like, yeah, this medium, and really it's just a storytelling medium that can be so creative and expansive. Discovering Dave McKean's work was a huge inspiration, and that's still a huge inspiration of just like, that guy's wild. Like, he'll like make puppets and then take photographs of them and paint over top of them. Like, it's all within like a single page. Like, it's wild stuff. And so, that was definitely the spark there in my early years, but not until like end of high school.
Yeah, no, that's great. No, I mean, I know John's been reading them since he came out of the womb. So, and I was sort of like you, just random comics as I was younger, for different reasons. But, you know, I didn't get heavily into it until probably the 90s when Image had that, you know, revolution that they had of, you know, just taking those guys and creating Image Comics. And then from then on, it just nonstop. I don't think I've taken a year off from reading at least something. But John and I have been really heavy on independent stuff for quite some time now. When we say independent, I mean either small press or,
yeah,
I mean, because Image Comics is huge now, and they're the third biggest company, but we still call them independent just because they're creator owned, in that sense.
It's an indie vibe of creators trying to take risks and make something that feels personal and like a passion project. As opposed to, you know, working within a established brand and a larger team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely playing outside of the sandbox, which is great. All right. So you started late, which is okay. You're a late bloomer. What kind of made you want to create your own comic? Because we know as creators, I know how labor intensive it is. I know how satisfying a completed project can be. But sometimes the payoff just isn't there. Like, you can be satisfied all you want in the world, but if it doesn't put, you know, bacon and food on the table, it becomes sort of like this cumbersome thing. So what made you want to create your own?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, coming out of high school and going to university and going into the school of art where, you know, art is now taken seriously. It's not just a class in high school. It's like, this is why I'm here. And my teachers, my professors taking it seriously as well. And then, you know, in that first year of fine arts and just, you know, you're in painting class, you're in drawing class, you're in sculpture class. And it's all very, it's all taken very seriously. And then on my own on the side, discovering comics by myself and starting to dabble in writing my own comic story, I kind of just viewed it as another art project. You know, this is, you know, I'm making paintings and sculptures and drawings in class, and in my free time I'm working on this comic, and it kind of just felt like a project, and I didn't really know what I was going to do with it in the end, but I just wanted to make it. I just had the drive to see this become a finished product. And it just kind of went from there. And I applied to exhibit at our local Comic-Con here in Winnipeg, which, you know, C4, the Central Canada Comic-Con, which has since dissolved and been kind of reestablished by the organization. I can't remember the name of the umbrella, but they run like Montreal Comic-Con and Ottawa Comic-Con. And so they're a more established brand. But yeah, kind of just, I'm going to take the plunge. I'm going to apply for my big local Comic-Con. And then that was kind of the driving force of, okay, I'm going to finish this thing and figure out how to print it, and just kind of called around and like, oh, there's local printers and how does that work? And I just kind of learned step by step, but really just treating it as this personal art project that grew into, hey, I want to share this with the world. How do I do that? And just kind of, yeah, taking a risk on it, calculated risk. You know, I wasn't, you know, blowing the bank on printing 2,000 copies of this. It was like 200 copies. And that was doable, and just baby steps trying to like make it work and grow from there, from that project onto my next project. But yeah, it's time consuming and it takes a long time. Like that, my first book, Romulus and Remus issue 1, is 34 pages long. And I think it took me 3 years to make it.
Wow.
And, but you know, I was also in university. Right. And so, working and, you know, having part-time jobs as well. So yeah, it was really just a side project that I slowly chipped away at and finished. But then the follow-up to that, Romulus and Remus issue 2, there's only 2 issues. It's just a 2-parter. Issue 2 is almost twice as long, and I finished that in about 6 months. So basically, once I kind of established this, you know, figured out how to do it or kind of got my sea legs with that first issue, then wrapping it up with the second issue really just kind of, I think that was my full-time job that summer. I decided not to, fall of that school year. I didn't have a job then, and I decided, you know what, I'm really going to try to make a go of it. I was still living with my parents, and I was like, they've been extremely supportive, and they're like, you know what, we trust that you know what you're doing, and you seem really confident and passionate about this, and so we're gonna, you know,
that's awesome.
Let you do your thing and see how this goes for you. And so I was extremely supportive of them. I'm extremely grateful for my parents.
Definitely the support.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is you mentioned like the stigma of, well, there used to be a stigma when it came to, you know, anything comic book related, especially with, you know, John Nong growing up. And I remember going to school and talking to one of my teachers, my art teachers, and letting them know that, you know, I had an interest in pursuing like comics. And they were kind of like, ugh, that's not a medium you want to go into. And I know, John, I mean, you grew up with it for a long time and sort of like the stigma of what comics were back then to where they are now.
Oh, yeah.
In regards to like, you know, being a reputable medium now, especially, I think it's mostly because of everything that's going on, obviously with the movies and everything, as of late.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at like comic history and you look at like specific creators over the era and creators that are like revered now, and have kind of always been in the comic world, like Neil Adams, right? Neil Adams, he didn't make the money off the comics. He was a commercial artist. He did a lot of advertising art. You know, some of his contemporaries like Tom Palmer Sr. and, you know, all these guys were working outside of comics to pay the bills. And then the comics was, you know, even for a few years, a lot of them didn't even use their own names, you know? So it really wasn't until, you know, fandom started to grow up, I guess, in like the 70s and 80s, where then all of a sudden these guys could do less in the commercial art field and make comics a full-time gig. But yeah, a lot of them, it was a dirty little secret, right? You know, a lot of them had pen names and, you know, but a lot of them, yeah, it was all commercial art, you know, magazine, print art, like stuff like that. That was the real job. And the comics was like, I work in comics, you know, and then it just blew up, you know, and with people like us revering these people and bringing that spotlight on their comic work, you know, it gives hope to a lot of the younger generations as well too.
Yeah,
especially to come forward with this medium, which is fantastic. Now, you spoke a little bit about teams, but you're not a team, you're solo, right? You do writing, drawing, inking. Talk to us a little bit about that process and, you know, what process you go through when, you know, doing a project like Hologram Hunter.
Yeah.
That we're going to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I was talking about earlier, I just viewed it as an art project. And so I was just like, I'll just figure out how to do it. In high school, I was really into creative writing and I was really into art, but I always viewed those things separately. You know, I was, you know, dabbling in creative writing and just, you know, prose text on paper and also doing drawing. And eventually I just, when discovering comics and after that spark of discovering Mike Mignola's work and then others, I realized, oh, I can tell the stories I want to tell through this medium. And it can really take any shape that I want and it can look like anything I want. So that was the spark. And, I appreciate the flexibility. I think I'm very visual in how I think and how I interpret stories and you know, how you sort of deliver atmosphere and mood. And so I really appreciate being a solo creator that I can take the time that for you know, pages and pages, you know, it can be entirely silent, but the story's still there. It's not just empty space. And so being able to wear those different hats as I see fit, and it feels like no one is stepping on no one's toes. I think that's the case. Maybe I'm just very controlling in my work. Maybe I just don't play well with others. I have this vision in my head and I want to get that onto paper. And I think about kind of each project kind of outside myself. Is I don't think of, I think of less so as this project coming from my artistic sensibilities and more so, I have an idea for this project. What artistic sensibilities should I adopt to make this project the best it can be? And that's why, like, most, if you look at sort of most of my comics, I've done 7 or 8 different comics or graphic novels by this point. They're all pretty different in tone and in style and in format. You know, I've done some weird experimental stuff, including this current book, Hologram Hunter. And yeah, I think about what does the project need to be? What kind of artist or writer do I need to be to make this project the best it can be, rather than forcing my own kind of pre-established sensibilities into the project? So I always try to kind of be fluid in what kind of artist I need to be per project.
And you went to school to be an artist, a visual artist, right?
Yeah.
And it was, but it wasn't specifically for comics. You just kind of gravitated towards that. So yeah, you have that artist mind. And a lot of art students, I mean, they do, it's all work they're doing themselves. It's not very collaborative in a lot of ways, I think, from what I know of visual art schools and things like that. So yeah, you are tackling it on your own. And I love the fact that, yeah, you had a story you wanted to tell. You were inspired by this specific medium and a specific artist, which is great. And then you just kind of dove into it and figured it out yourself. You know,
yeah.
We talked not too long about James O'Barr when he made The Crow.
Mm-hmm.
His story is that he wasn't an artist. It was catharsis for him. And he just figured out how to do it. And he did the whole thing himself, you know. And I love that aspect. I love that inquisitive nature and that follow through. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that drive that I want to make this a reality. And it seems doable. You know, this is not technology outside of, you know, what I can do. Like I know how to draw, or I can learn how to draw, and I know how to write, or I can learn how to write better. And that's all within my power. And so being able to see that finish line in my mind, as opposed to, you know, I've had all kinds of artistic, you know, pipe dreams of like, oh, I have this idea for a movie or a video game or what, like that seems outside of my realm of being a solo creator and you know, the technology or equipment or people that you need to get involved to make that a reality seems a lot more far-fetched than, you know, I know how to make a comic. I can see that. I can see the ABC through line to make this a reality.
Right. No, that's good. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've done a couple of solo projects as well, and I love the freedom of being able to do everything from the writing to the drawing. And it is cumbersome, but at the same time, there's a certain amount of freedom because I don't have to do as much as a writer. I don't have to write too many notes because I know what's in my head and what I want to get out. So there's that freedom there. However, because I'm by myself and I have that vision, sometimes I feel that my vision is 100% clear. So this is where I have people come in and read what I have that's going to be coming out to see if it makes any sense. Do you work with like an editor, or do you work with anybody, or share your story as you're plotting stuff out to make sure?
Oh, absolutely. My partner, Sam, is definitely my biggest editor. Yeah, I'll consult with her on basically all my projects, as someone who is, you know, from an outside perspective, but still interested in what I'm working on. And we share a lot of similar interests in terms of art and comics and movies and things like that. And so, yeah, that's always great. But yeah, I have like so many artist friends that I'm bouncing off of, and making things in a vacuum, I feel like, is never a good idea.
Mm.
I always like to think of when making basically any art form that you need the confidence in yourself to believe in what you're trying to make, to follow through with it and say, you know what, I think this is a good idea and I think other people are going to like it too. But I think overconfidence is bad, because overconfidence means that you will make mistakes. You're overconfident. You know, even for the briefest moment, you think you can do no wrong. And that can be bad in terms of, you know, making a book that is confusing or, you know, interpreted the wrong way or possibly offensive in a way that you did not mean. And that kind of getting feedback from folks, I think, is extremely important. But yeah, we've got a good, especially here in Winnipeg, we've got a really good base of comic creators and artists. I'm actually on the organizing committee for our indie comic event called the Prairie Comic Arts Festival. No, actually, did I say that wrong? Prairie Comics Festival. I said the name of my own organization. Yeah, Prairie Comics Festival. So we're a small committee. There's just like four of us, and we do an event that's happening in September here at a local venue. And we've got like 40 comic creators, and it's just indie comics. That's it.
Nice.
A lot of local creators, and also people coming from across Canada as well. I don't know if you're familiar with TCAF, the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, mm-mm, which is, it's amazing. That was actually probably another big formative part of making comics, was visiting TCAF for the first time. It is the size of a Comic-Con, just indie comics.
Wow.
No fan art, no movies, no, like, they actually have some indie games, but it's kind of in a small corner. But yeah, it's just indie games. It's not big games. And that was incredible. That was so incredible. You walk by every single booth and it's just creativity just oozing out of everyone's work. And yeah, it's none of it's fan art. It's all just original content. It's incredible. Highly recommend if you are going up to Toronto around May, first, second weekend of May. Okay. Toronto Comic Arts Festival, it's great. It's free to attend. It's amazing. They host it in their reference library, which is a beautiful building, and like all three floors of the library are just filled with vendors.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, yeah, so that actually sounds great. I mean, Toronto, you said, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I know where I'm going to go next May.
Yes. That'd be great. Yeah.
So what's the end game for you then? I mean, we're going to talk about your project on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Are you looking to get distributed? Are you looking to get into stores, or is this, you just want to get your story out there?
I just want to get my story out there and do it in a way that I can, you know, sustain myself, that I can keep the roof over my head and afford food and such. If that means down the road that I need to look into distribution or publishers, then I'll go there. But if I can keep doing it solo, like I tried to do with this latest Kickstarter, because this is my first Kickstarter too.
Okay.
And so, yeah, if I'm, every step is kind of a little experiment and see how it goes. And if that ends up being a step back, then I'll reassess and try to go another route. Maybe one of those routes in the future is going with a publisher. I did have a publisher briefly. I got my rights back for my last graphic novel, my biggest graphic novel, Arkland, which is a standalone sci-fi fantasy adventure story. It's very fun and lighthearted. It's very sort of Star Wars, Legend of Zelda themed. And that's a standalone 260 page graphic novel, just one shot adventure, big, big fun adventure. And that was originally with a publisher that we had falling out, and they had a falling out with a lot of their other our authors as well. And I got my rights back, and now I'm just selling that again and distributing that again as if it's independent, because it is currently independently owned. So yeah, I have tried that before, and it was a bit of a difficult and eye-opening experience in many respects. I don't want to get too much into that. But yeah, it's definitely made me cautious of like maybe I should keep, if I can keep doing it by myself, maybe I should stay the course. But you know, I'm open to you know, trying just about anything, trying what needs to happen.
We're definitely in a time where that is feasible, where you can do things on your own, just because of where technology is, how we can promote ourselves. The crowdfunding area or arena that a lot of people take advantage of. So distribution, you know, the old school way isn't the only way now.
Yeah.
And we know that. And dealing with a bunch of different publishers. And I know, I mean, you can throw a rock and hit like 90,000 publishers from small to major. And it's just finding the right fit for a lot of people. And it's the other way around as well, because you know, as we've been around for probably 6 years now as a, you know, a small press publisher, and I would say in upwards of 80% of the stuff that we receive is never completed, completed on the creator's end. And that's what makes this, you know, part of the industry really, really tough, is that you have a bunch of people with really great ideas, And just nothing just coincides. Like there's very few times where, you know, publisher, creator, distribution kind of comes together and has that big harmonious moment. More often than not, it's people just stumbling through. And it's crazy. You think somebody would have wrote a book by now on all of this stuff that's going on. But it just constantly changes. And, you know, most people are just sticking with the big, you know, three now when it comes to distribution. And now we see even smaller distribution companies opening up to try to get more books into stores. And, you know, Phil and I work. I did it. I told you I was going to do it. So John and I both work at, in a store as well. So we're on the retail end. We understand that portion of it. Yeah. The shrinkage of retail over the last, you know, couple of years has been horrible. You know, and there's still shops that are surviving. And I think they just need more great content. It's just a matter of, you know, finding a place where, you know, retailers who have been in business for a long time don't want to change the way that they get their comics. And then being able to be supportive to new comic shops that probably don't know as much about getting more people on board. But yeah, it's we've been wrestling with it for a long time. So there's things that, you know, I wish would change, but it's going to be a while. But it's awesome that, you know, that you're doing stuff. So let's get into your project. So let's talk about your Kickstarter and go from there. So why don't you let us know, you know, what this whole hologram.
Oh, wow. You got a great graphic here and everything. Oh. yeah. So this is my latest graphic novel, Hologram Hunter. It's a one-shot experimental comic. Sort of the pitch or the gimmick of it is half the book is 2D illustration and half the book is 3D illustration that you look at with red and blue old school 3D glasses. Hmm. And yeah, this is an idea that I've just had for maybe a decade now of when first discovering that, just messing around with 3D art and discovering, oh, I can kind of just make this work. And so the medium came first, the style came first of, oh, this is cool. I can make something look 3D. And then thinking of what comic idea I could do this in. So it kind of went kind of backwards for this book. And yeah, when I first started dabbling with this, I had an idea for a fantasy comic, a sci-fi comic, and a horror comic.
Hmm.
And the fantasy comic I was briefly working on with a friend, but then we moved on to other jobs and stuff. And so that fizzled out a bit. And then the horror comic has since ballooned into something much bigger and weirder and longer. And then so I decided to give it a go still with this sci-fi comic, trying 3D art for the first time.
So give us the premise of the book.
So the premise of the book, it's very atmospheric. It's very sort of moody. It is about a nameless protagonist exploring this desolate city with a robotic companion named Whiskers, who kind of looks like a cat. They are in this desolate city, and there's this sort of parasitic robotic presence that's kind of lurking around each corner of the city. And so they have to dive into the hive mind, the virtual hive mind of these robotic parasites to find the source of their spread. That's the point of the book when it transitions to 3D, when they go into this virtual world. So it's very kind of, Matrix, Ghost in the Shell, Digimon, kind of all kinds of just real world, virtual world flip that is very fun. And almost all of this book is illustrated using 3D assets. So I am illustrating this book in a 3D program. And then adding rendering over top of it. So that's been a really cool process and also extremely time consuming to render out this background. So you can see on the cover here, this sort of big city, you know, landscape sort of courtyard here. That's a 3D set. That's a 3D environment that you can pan around, and those are all 3D shapes and objects in a 3D environment, as well as the robots that you see encroaching in front there.
Nice.
And so that was the biggest experiment initially, was playing around with building 3D models and building these sort of 3D illustrations, and then realizing that if you take a snapshot of one of sort of one angle, and then you move the camera slightly over to the left or right, take another snapshot, you turn those respectively into blue and red, and it kind of just works. It, like, the 3D pops out at you, and that was the most exciting thing, is to realize that this kind of just works. It takes a lot of finesse and playing around from there, but that was really cool to discover, and you can really kind of feel the depth of the space. It's not flat illustration that I'm then, you know, cutting out and extruding like it's kind of paper cutouts floating one on top of the other. These are 3D environments that I am rendering that you can look at in 3D.
So you're going 3D to 2D back to 3D.
That's correct. Wow. And then back to 3D again, because for this Kickstarter, I also have 3D printed models of some of the figures from those models, which is also crazy because you saw the hunter, the nameless hunter on the cover. This is his avatar when he's in the virtual world.
Nice.
And this is the 3D model from the book. This isn't like an approximation of my illustration of the character. This is the character one-to-one that I just ripped out of the book. Like, it's crazy. It's wild. This is Whiskers, the robotic companion who takes on a much more cat-like form in the virtual world as this kind of hovering robot companion.
That's funny. Now, these are going to be available on the Kickstarter as well?
Yeah. So these are on the Kickstarter. A friend is helping me print those out, and I have another friend who's doing sort of a premium version that are hand painted.
That's awesome. All right, so
I love that you're doing the figures aspect. I love that you're doing that figures aspect for the Kickstarter. I think that's super cool, and it just adds something extra to it. And the fact that it does come from the art is really neat.
Yeah, it felt like I couldn't not, because, you know, I made these 3D models and I spent so much time on this, and then just, again, it's all kind of just experiments leading one to the other. Is I was like, can I print these out? Oh, I can. I have to print these out now. Like, I can't pass this up.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
So then what did you do to create the 2D art? Are you traditional pencil and paper, or are you using digital?
So those are 3D sets. Those are 3D models as well. Okay. And so, building these 3D sets, composing the sets. I tend to think of comics more and more from a film-like language of building sets and moving a camera around and placing actors, characters within those sets. Taking screenshots of those environments and then rendering over top of them. So there's a lot of 2D, of extra sort of digital art painting over top of them, but the base of it, the skeleton of it, is a 3D model.
So that keeps the art consistent throughout the book as well.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, so I started doing that with my previous graphic novel, Arkland, that I mentioned. Because that book was so big and there's so many reoccurring environments, I started using 3D models more as a sketch reference than in the art itself, for that consistency. You know, I had a scene in one of the first chapters that's in a tavern, and they're having this conversation, and the camera's moving around, you know, trying to keep dynamic camera angles moving around, and just the trying to keep track of, okay, how wide is this wall, and there's two windows there, and because I love background art and I love fleshing out those environments, but keeping track of all those details is a nightmare. And so having these 3D sets where I know where all the tables and chairs are and where people are standing roughly, and how wide or tall a wall is, where windows are, it is so nice keeping track of that. And that's where I first started dabbling with that.
That's pretty cool. Well, now you got it mastered, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Next book is going to be a breeze. Actually, well, I'm working in other 3D software now. It's every time I got to make it harder for myself. I'm always trying something new. I can never sit still.
Cool. That's awesome. As an artist, that's amazing, you know, that you keep pushing yourself and challenging yourself. And it really, the results are great because it does create a wonderful depth of field in your art, even the flat 2D. The one thing that struck me by the sample pages was just, yeah, how lush and dense everything is. And your design work is amazing as well. Everything just looks really, really nice and really cool. And it's funny when you mentioned Dave McKean earlier, I could see that now as far as your, you know, because we get, like you said, he would paint puppet, build a puppet, paint it, build these shelves, like Sandman covers. He would build these shelves and then put stuff in them and then photograph it. And I could see that as an influence to you because, yeah, everything has this sort of weight and heaviness and thickness to it.
Thank you.
That really makes it feel solid, which even in a 2D, still feels like it might be a 3D. Like, you get that depth. I love that.
Thank you. I'm glad that comes across because that's a big goal of mine. Is I'm so inspired by film and animation and video games that I want to make comics that while they're static and they're flat, I want it to feel like you are in this environment, that when, you know, the panel changes and the camera moves from one angle to the next, that you can keep track of, you know, I was looking at this angle and now I'm looking over here, and this thing that is in this corner, now I'm seeing it from this perspective. I want it to feel like a physical space, like you're in that environment. And that was a big part of Hologram Hunter, not just experimenting with this 3D style, but just creating this lush environment that feels vivid and feels physical because it is physical. I constructed it. And it's all cohesive too. Like the map that the character traces through, like, is coherent. You know, that ladder leads to this platform, leads to this corridor. It's all, it is physically continuous. I think that's my goal, is I want to make books that you feel like you can, fall into and explore. And I'm just trying to get there with every project.
Yeah, and it sounds like this book is for that, because now I'm going to go back and, because I don't look at comics that way. So I read the panel for panel, and for me, the gutter spaces is where I fill in the information.
Yeah.
And a lot of the information you already have there. So I don't look at panels and say, you know, I was just in that room, now I'm in this room. Now when I read comics, I'm going to go and do that and look at backgrounds and see if they're cohesive in that sense. But it'll be interesting to see how this works, because it's almost like you can lay out the whole book and just have this, you know, one room, like a 3D aspect of a room, which is, it's just going through my head and it's blowing my head off. It's crazy.
It doesn't work for every project. You know, it's, you know, some books don't prioritize backgrounds, and that's fine. You know, if it's about the characters, if it's about, you know, relationships, or it's more about those interactions and it's not about the spaces they're in. That's not to say that's a bad thing. That's just something that I love and I want to.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that was my point. I think that you made the space, the background, a character. So people want to know as much about the character, the background as a character, than the characters that are exploring.
Absolutely.
The background, which is crazy. I've never, like, for me, when I've read comics, the background has never, it's just been the background. Mm-hmm. But to have that kind of be part of the story, like the last time I was actually awed by background images was Scotty Young stuff. That last book that he did, what was it called? Twig?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it wasn't him drawing it, right?
No, it was the other.
He wrote it. But he had the influence of Scotty Young was all over the place. And he had just these really tremendously beautiful backgrounds. And I didn't read. I just stared at them for like minutes before I moved on to the next page. So it kind of had me intrigued. As opposed to when you're reading sort of like a superhero book, and it's more about the character in the foreground.
Yeah.
And then the backgrounds are just whatever they are, in our respects. And it's cool to see sort of the background become a character of the story and have the people drawn into that, especially with the 3D glasses. Now, as far as Kickstarter is concerned, you said this was your first Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking, you have 11 days to go, and you've already made goal.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you. As of 3 or 4 days ago, I reached my funding. And yeah, it's incredible. It doesn't feel real. But yeah, I'm extremely grateful for my support. So now
talk about that process. You know, why Kickstarter? You know, what was that process like?
It felt like time. It felt like I had been thinking of trying Kickstarter for a long time because I've seen other people do it with decent success. And it was just kind of waiting for the right project to kind of to try that out. Again, everything that I do is an experiment, and nothing I ever try I think is ever going to be a guaranteed. And so for this project, you know, it's a shorter one-off graphic novel. It's got this cool kind of gimmick attached to it. It felt like, okay, let me try this out. I think it could stand out. I think it could be a cool trial run. I don't really know if the Kickstarter hadn't been successful, I hadn't really thought what that route would be. If I would then sort of just publish the book digitally, you know, you try to explore other options. But yeah, it seemed like a good fit to promote it and to get it into people's hands from, you know, not just locally, but all around. Because we were talking about distribution earlier, and I do the convention circuit here in Canada. I don't do state I don't do conventions in the States or outside of Canada, but I do about, you know, 7 to 10 conventions a year. Which is a big part of, you know, how I make a living is I'm kind of my own distribution. Is I go on the road and I'm in the artist alley and I sell my books there. But then a platform like Kickstarter is a great way to get it to folks to the places that I'm not at, especially outside of Canada. And so, yeah, that's really cool. And also take advantage of these other opportunities like the 3D printed figures. It seemed like a good, okay, I've got enough ideas that I can't really fund this myself without some help, that it seemed like a good time to try Kickstarter.
No, I mean, it's a good project to start out with. This is what you had going for it, right? One, it's a one shot. Yeah. So it's not something that people are going to have to wait on the second issue, third issue, fourth issue for like 3 years down the road. I think that's one of the big problems that most people do is they do single issues and they're not out every month. They're out every 6 months or 7 months or whatever it is while they're doing projects. Two, it's something unique. So, I mean, we've not seen, like I told you, I went down a rabbit hole. And I think the last thing that I saw that was 3D worthy was like in the 60s or early 70s. There was even something by Jack Kirby, which was crazy. I forgot what it was called.
It's just, but you know, like the digital or the 3D comics sort of track with 3D movies. It's every 30 years there's sort of this resurgence of 3D. It was big in the 50s, and in the 80s, a lot of 3D movies. And then again in the early 2000s, early 2010s, every movie was.
So you're saying I'm starting the new trend.
You're starting the next 30 year trend. Yeah.
Yes.
And what's interesting with the comics, when comics jumped on the 3D bandwagon, a lot of it was just reprinting existing comic material and just doing the red blue, just printing them with the red blue, and then you get the glass, whatever. Yeah. And then it was, you know, there was a point, where it's then original material was being made. Like John Byrne did a Batman graphic novel in the 90s entirely in 3D. And then recently we've seen a couple, Hell Cop. That book
came
out. Yes. The first issue was re-released as 3D, came with the glasses. So we're kind of seeing that trend come back. For me, the nostalgia of just having the red blue 3D glasses on your face is just, I'm a kid again, you know, watching that terrible movie Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone. But I love the movie because it was 3D, you know. So like so I love that feeling and that aspect. And this is digital and print, and the 3D effect carries over both.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. So
yeah.
Wait, so that if you get it digital, do you get the glasses?
So yeah, I have the it depends on the tier. So my lowest tier is digital, no glasses. But you can still read it, you know, it's not entirely incoherent without glasses. It just won't look 3D, but you can see what's going on as a flat image. It just has that kind of chromatic aberration effect. And then the next tier above that, for only another $5, you get the digital comic, but then I'll mail you the glasses, and a postcard.
A postcard for Canada. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. No, it was great. I'm looking at the tiers and stuff like that, which are fantastic. There's just one thing missing. There's no popcorn.
No popcorn.
3D glasses, you have to have popcorn.
Yeah.
That would have been fantastic. That's that's awesome. All right, so you've already made a goal. We're going to put the link, obviously, inside or below here so you guys can check it out. He has 11 more days to go. It looks really interesting. I'm actually going to go on today. I'm going to support this project because I want to get my book.
Really appreciate it.
And check it out. Yeah, which is awesome. Now, so this is almost done, correct?
Yeah. Yes. It's been a slow burn just working through the 3D, and sometimes there's technical hiccups. But yeah, I'm like 10 pages from finishing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what's after? Do you have anything on the horizon?
Like next project?
Next project.
Oh,
you're going to take a much needed break.
Behind here, you would see my I've got a curtain up here, but behind it is my wall of post-it notes on the horror comic that I mentioned earlier that I've been trying to storyboard that for years now. So that's on the horizon. I've got a sort of more long form fantasy comic that I want to do that's about witches. Again, I'm not really sure what kind of shape it's going to take, if it's going to be a larger graphic novel, a trilogy, maybe I'll try my hand at a webtoon style thing. Don't really know yet. That's still in the sort of concept art and planning stages. I actually have a lot of, not to pitch two platforms at once, but on my Patreon, I actually have monthly breakdowns of what I've been working on that are pretty in-depth about either Hologram Hunter or my back burner projects or just one-off illustrations. And those are free to read. You don't have to be like subscribed to my Patreon to read those. Right. Freely available. But yeah, I always have stuff on the go. I've got, you know, 5 different ideas in my head that I want to do next. And it's just a matter of finishing the current project and getting to the next one.
No, that's great. Yeah. So that's a bunch of different genres. So
oh, yeah.
Do you feel like you work across different genres? Can you change your style to fit a specific genre? Or
I mean, I always work kind of within that sci-fi fantasy kind of spectrum.
Okay.
And you know, working on like a horror book that I'm definitely taking a lot more seriously as sort of a serious, more character drama, and definitely drawing from more personal experience in that respect as well. You know, it's still within the kind of fantasy-ish spectrum. Okay. I like speculative fiction in that sense that I like exploring alternative realities and playing with that, playing with different worlds that have different rules and different environments. I think that's most exciting for me.
Cool. Now, is there a genre that you feel like you're not 100% on that you want to tackle?
What's that? Sorry?
Is there like a genre that you don't feel 100% comfortable with that you would like to tackle?
I mean, honestly, horror, okay, as I mentioned, is, and that's probably why I've been working on it for so long, is I think, and maybe that's, it's more so also my reservations with the comic medium in horror is like, that's hard to do.
Mm.
You know, a movie can have jump scares and that'll get you. You can't do that in a comic. And I've been thinking for a long time that I want to make a book that is scary, legitimately scary. And I'm trying it out and I'm slowly chipping away at it. And I'm slowly trying to craft this world that gets under your skin. And we'll see. It'll probably be another 10 years till I.
There's been a couple. I mean, I'm trying to think of who's the John. Maybe you know the writer of Plastic. He just did.
Those guys. The Plastic Vinyl.
Yeah. Because it's not so much scary. It's more like psychological.
Yeah.
Kind of scary, and I think that's where the medium really does well. Like Kill or Be Killed was great because it was more of a mental thing than any like than just being like a scary horror book. Well, it wasn't horror, but more in that sense. But yeah, I mean, even Gideon Falls with Lemire, right? Was great. And I think it's when you can create suspense, and when you can create sort of like this, if you can have people imagine what it is that you want them to imagine, then you've got them hooked.
Yeah,
a lot of it is in the visuals, I think, for me in horror. I think a lot of it is in the writing itself. And oftentimes the art is going to be the mood
Yeah.
Because I think there was a couple of horror books that we read, because Phil and I are constantly reviewing books. And there was one that we read that we thought would be really good. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was drawn in a very cartoony style.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of took us out of the element completely.
Yeah.
Like it was a horror book that was drawn sort of cartoony.
Yeah.
And it was great too, but I just couldn't get into it just because it was like oil and vinegar. They just weren't.
Yeah, it's that suspension of disbelief that is that you really need to break through that barrier.
Right.
And the more layers that you add to it, the harder that barrier becomes to break through. You know, being legitimately scared by something, you know, is hard enough in film when it's live actors.
Yep.
You know, obviously, you're watching that on a television screen or in a movie theater, and it's obviously not real. But for that to get you, you know, is powerful. And I think it's even another step removed to do that in illustration or in written prose. And so, yeah, again, exploring sort of 3D artwork and sculpting environments and trying to make detailed environments and putting yourself in the shoes of the characters in those situations is something that I'm trying to craft while also just trying to craft compelling and relatable characters in a written narrative sense is something that, yeah, that is, I'd say that is most out of my element that I really want to try. And I really want to try because, you know, my previous books that are in Hologram Hunter, they're, you know, as hard as I try to make, you know, compelling characters and compelling narratives and environments, they're still fairly fluffy. It's fairly lighthearted adventure stories. And so this is my first time trying to tackle something that really hits home. We'll see if I succeed or not. Yeah, it's all.
Yeah,
that's
good. I mean, and it's a lot of it is research as well. And I mean, you know, John and I have been doing this for a long time, just, you know, reading different books and trying to understand the perspective of the creator. And I think the books that we've really, really enjoyed is the books that had really great characterization. But not only that, the stakes that were involved in each one of the characters' lives mm-hmm. was so great that you had no choice but to be really involved. And when you can get a person invested emotionally because you really care about the character and the stakes are really high, when those two things come together, then you're right at edge. And it could be with anything. I mean, you could do it with a wrestling book. And me and Fig and John talk about this book all the time because Daniel Warren Johnson is one of my favorite, you know, writer artists. So he draws and he writes. And he did this book called Do a Powerbomb. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but holy shit, that book was a roller coaster of emotions. But it's wrestling. And wrestling is at the forefront, but there's such a heart that's in the background to that story between a mother's love, a daughter's love, father to daughter. It was just beyond. And so when I'm looking at things and I'm trying to tackle things, that's something that's at the forefront of my brain all the time is, you know, how can I grab somebody like that and take them along for the ride and then have, you know, a really satisfying ending. I think if you're going to keep doing anything, I think what you're doing is great. Just keep doing the one-offs. I think as creators, you know, the long form of single issues is probably not the best, you know, route for independent creators that are going through the campaign or going through crowdfunding or anything like that.
But then there's new platforms like Webtoons that I think make that a lot more accessible, but it's harder to get paid from that. And so that's where, again, when I'm talking about like my next big fantasy comic that I've been working on about witches, that is definitely a longer story. And I am contemplating, I'm weighing all my options. I'm putting them all out on a table and seeing what could be a good fit, either for the story itself, how the narrative is structured, and, you know, financially and within whatever timeline I work within. But yeah, you know, can I do a weekly Webtoon release that builds a following and then release a collected volume? You know, these are options that I've seen people done before and can do successfully. Yeah. Well, we'll see.
The options are there, which are great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always looking for new ways of making my work and also releasing it. You know, various digital platforms. Yeah, and it's always fun to experiment with that.
No, that's good. I mean, you're doing a lot of right things, going onto the circuit and exploring different ways to get your stuff out there.
Thank you.
Which is fantastic.
Hold on to that hard drive with all the 3D models for Hologram Hunter, because when they want to do the eventual animated adaptation,
that's
you
right.
already have it.
You have all the sets. That's right. Yeah.
All right, John, do you have anything else for him before we ask him the final question?
No, just good luck with the last few days of the Kickstarter. Look forward to seeing this. If you're ever down east, come on down and say hi to us. And I hope you hit your stretch goals too, because those 3D glasses with the designs on them,
yes,
are really cool. So I
Thank
hope
you.
Those get to happen as also.
Yeah, I hope so as well.
And keep challenging yourself, man. You're on the right track. You've been doing this 10 years. I hope you got many, many more decades ahead of you doing this. Because
thank you.
You got the right attitude, and I love that you like to challenge yourself. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's cool. I definitely sound passionate about it. So yeah, hopefully you have many, many more years and decades ahead of you of just creating comics. All right, last question then. So for any new up and comer who's looking to get into, you know, doing their own comics and stuff like that, artist, writer, whatever, what advice would you give them?
I feel like you hear a lot of people give the advice to start small. And I think that is good advice. I think not biting off more than you can chew for your first comic is good advice. However, I would tack on to that, start passionately. Because if you try to start small with something experimental that is just sort of getting your feet wet, but you're not super into it because you are treating it as just a test run, your heart's not going to be in it and you probably won't finish it. But if there's another project idea that is like, I really want to do this and that would be really cool, but maybe it's a little longer, maybe it's a little harder, maybe the ideas are a little more complicated, give it a go, because your passion will see you through to the finish line more than any other skill set. But believe in your own passion.
Nice. Very nice. All right, guys, it was great to have Scott Ford on. Like I said before, the link is going to be below. You guys can click on it, show him some Kickstarter love, so we can get this project. I got to go on today and do that, because it sounds really, really great. So Hologram Hunter, check it out on Kickstarter for there. So again, thanks again, Scott, for coming on board.
Thank you.
It was great having you. Maybe after everything's all said and done, we'll have you back on and see how everything went. That'd be good. All right, guys, if you like what you're hearing, make sure you click subscribe to the podcast. We'll be here every single week, John and I, doing either something, some indie content creator or some reviews. If you want to be on the podcast, your creator have a project, want to promote it, amazingactioncomics.com/podcast. Make sure you stay up to date on everything that we've got going on in Amazing Action Comics at amazingactioncomics.com. And as always, please, please, please support your local comic shop, because without them, we wouldn't be able to get our comics, really. And John and I wouldn't have a job during the week. So it's all good. So, all right, guys. Again, Scott, thank you for being on. Thank you guys for being here. And as always, please be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.